1340 WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the program. Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun, is on today as we talk racer sports, all sorts of things today. We're going to talk football, basketball, golf, soccer, volleyball, and maybe a few other things as well. Ed, we're both at this past week's football game against UT Martin. I thought it would be a really difficult game for the Racers. Martin coming off that really big win against Austin Peay, 37-7, and the Racers jumped on them and then held on at the end, 31-10 at the half. I'll tell you, I was mighty impressed with what I saw out of Murray State football.
Well, it started with Drew Anderson's prolific passing clinic. And again, I think a lot of it had to do with, obviously, his comfort in the pocket. I think he took three sacks, but two of them, again, came on that one drive where they got pinned back early. UT Martin came coming. But you take a look at, it was 14 for 14 to start the game. By halftime, I think he was 16 for 21 for 273 yards, threw for another 100 in the second half. I think he ended up finishing 23 for 32, would have had four passing touchdowns, except he had an unfortunate interception right at the left pylon with the Racers trying to get, I think, a three-score lead at that point. But I still think, and I've written a lot about it already, including today's story, what Quincy was looking at there. The pick six from Quincy Williams won the game.
Yeah.
And just in my mind. I mean,
I agree.
I mean, you knew UT Martin was going to go into like a hurry-up kind of a RPO system where they could move the ball up the field without much huddle and pick three to four different options on each play. But fourth and four at the 22, UT Martin trying to cut it to one score with 12 minutes to go would have put a lot of pressure on that Racer offense to stay on the field. And he just picks it and takes it to the house from the left flat. And I just thought that play particularly was just very backbreaking for UT Martin. The late rush by DJ Pinnick to get the first down to essentially seal the game
right. Was
obviously big. I thought the running game, despite the low yardage, you see it's like 85, 86 total yards. I mean, there was a 13-yard loss on Preston Rice's goal line fumble recovery where he was trying to punch it in and the snap just got through his hands. That's another touchdown that should have been on the board for the Racers instead of a field goal. Should have been about a 35-10 lead at halftime. Just a prolific offensive performance for the Racers, one that's been a long time coming, honestly, and a great defensive mindset in the second half, play prevent, didn't really allow a lot of big plays to happen. And then, of course, Quincy Williams pick six. Huge win, especially on family weekend when you had 11,000 at home.
Yeah, it was very good. I think gives the team some confidence that they needed. You know, at 0-3, you don't want to go 0-4 losing your OVC opener. But this week they go to Eastern Illinois, team that has been entertaining to say the least. They put up 52 points on the road last week against Tennessee Tech in their first win of the season. They're giving up 47 points per game. That's next to last in the league, but they're scoring 33 points per game. So they can put them on the board and they can give them up. This ought to be fun.
Well, from a yardage standpoint, they're one of the most prolific offenses in the conference right now. Granted, their schedule is very similar to the Racers. Mm-hmm. Had a couple early money games, a couple tough FCS games. They had to go play at Arkansas, played Illinois State, played Miami of Ohio. Beat Miami of Ohio, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? I think they did.
No, they did not. Eastern Illinois only has one win.
Do they?
Yeah, they were both winless last week.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, yeah. My mistake there.
They're 1-4 now, and Tennessee Tech's 0-5.
That's okay.
Winless teams.
Gotcha. In any case, you're still taking a look at a team from an offensive perspective. They are leading the league in offense, and it's mostly because of passing. They're getting 325 yards a game, and that's with Brantley or Woodbury at quarterback. Woodbury played last week against Tennessee Tech because of Brantley being hurt. It's a possibility that Brantley's back this week, which means that Kim Dameron, Houston Nutt's former assistant, has not one but two quarterbacks at his disposal. Their wide receiver that's leading, what's his name? He's got 601. I can tell you his stats. He got 601 receiving yards. That's second
Alexander
in the country.
Hollins.
Yeah, Hollins. Yeah, he's leading the country in touchdown catches at 9. He's second in the country in receiving yardage at 601. He's also second in catches in 43. So if Marquez Sanford and Cortez Roberts and Nigel Walton and this secondary, if they wanted a true target to have to really locked down, they got it this weekend. Also, their running game, Eastern Illinois, Isaiah Johnson ran all over Murray State last year. I believe he's the one. He's got, what, 280 rushing yards right now?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, he rushed for 160 of those last week. So they're trying to get him started. He had a big game against the Racers last year. Again, this is just a prolific offense that this defense is going to have to try and slow down.
It'll be fun. The Racers, I think, are reasonably healthy. Talk with Mitch Stewart. They don't have any sort of lingering injuries. And the Racers generally play well at Eastern Illinois. Sometimes, you know, they may lose, but usually it's a good game heading into the fourth quarter. We've had some of the best games I've ever called have been at Eastern Illinois, be they wins or losses. And this will be a fun one. I can't wait to see this.
I can't either. This game is always a shootout. I don't know why both teams could be some of the best defensive teams in the league at that year, and it just ends up being a shootout. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's Mitch versus Cam Dameron. I don't know if it's just the Racers getting up for a game like this. It's not that far of a bus drive. Everybody's rested up. I will say it's tough because it's a 6 o'clock game, so I know that football will kind of be sitting around waiting to play that game for the day. Whereas Eastern Illinois, they're already home.
Sure.
But you're exactly right, Neil. You take a look at the last 5 to 6 years of this rivalry, so to speak, and it's been a fun one. I think Kyle Schwartz from the OVC said that the road team has won this game the last 4 years, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken, going back to even Garoppolo. Garoppolo won here his senior year. So it's been a while since the home team's actually won. And I think Kim and his guys probably know that, too, because, yeah. I mean, they barely escaped Tech. I mean, I know they had a pretty big lead late, but Tech roared back to cut that to a 2-score game, and they're kind of working on their defense right now, which Mitch has mentioned as being more of an odd front right now. They're trying to tinker and figure out what works. The one thing I will have to say from a consistency standpoint, the Racers, they kind of know what their defense is right now. It's a 4-3 base. They kind of try and stop the run, something they did a really good job of doing against UT Martin, which ran it down Austin Peay's throat. So, you know, -4 rushing yards at the half by UT Martin at the against Murray State. Yeah. 16 carries. It's not like they didn't try to run. They were trying to run.
Couldn't do it.
And failed.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a tip of the cap to the Racer defense and coordinator Jake Johnson and how they were able to kind of take UT Martin out of their element early. They'll try to do the same against Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, years ago up there, you were talking about Garoppolo. I remember going into the press box, and their play-by-play guy comes over and goes, "Man, we got a slew of injuries. They had a really good quarterback. They said he can't start. He's hurt. We're going to have to start this redshirt kid." It's like, oh, man, we're gonna probably thump these guys up and down the field today, because they just – and the Racers won barely, and it was Jimmy Garoppolo. And at the end of it, it was like, that's your backup? Why is he your backup? That guy's pretty good. And from there on, we saw, oh, yeah, he's a little bit better than pretty good.
So, he's unfortunately has an ACL injury now and will not play the rest of the year. But
I hate that.
He is the San Francisco 49ers starter and the Italian Stallion.
Yeah, pretty tough.
$138 million contract.
Last week, Jacksonville State, they had to outscore Austin Peay now 20-6 in the fourth quarter, but they win 48-32. Peay is now 0-2, and then this week they get Tennessee State at home. Tennessee State, they lost at Vanderbilt. They led them at halftime 13-10, lost 31-27. Christian Abercrombie, serious injury in that game, was in critical condition. I think still is, but did show improvement overnight, according to a couple of sources, so that's good to hear. And we told you about Eastern Illinois' 52-38 win over Tennessee Tech. The other schedule this week, Jacksonville State, it's a big test for them. They go to Roy Kidd Stadium this week for Eastern Kentucky. We have SEMO back in action after a week off. They're at Tennessee Tech, and then, as I said, Tennessee State is at Austin Peay.
Well, and the one thing that I will say, it doesn't get any easier for Austin Peay. I know it's a tough 0-2 start, but they played arguably two of the best teams in the league at that point coming into those games. I mean, UT Martin was playing pretty well offensively, and of course, Jacksonville State's Jacksonville State. They're the four times defending OVC champions. So they haven't lost to a league opponent in a while. What is it, 3.5 years now?
I think so.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
So, It's kind of like Murray State women's soccer. You know, you just kind of have that consistent dominance over a 3 to 4 year span. That's just hard to maintain. Jacksonville State's maintained it. But, you know, it's always tough to win at Eastern Kentucky. I don't care who you are. You can be an FBS program. For some strange reason, Richmond has this void of success. That's why the Racers winning there a couple years ago was colossal, because it just, what had it been, 12 years, I think?
Yeah, I haven't called. I think I've called three wins up there. And I've started in 91, 92.
It's hard to do. Yeah. I mean, it just, there's just something about it. Like, Roy Kidd Stadium is just has, like, this negative shield of success. And you just, you can't go in there and win. It's just almost an impossible environment. But, you know, Jacksonville State, obviously, its two toughest tests has succeeded. So, they're at the top. And everything else is really a mad jumble at the moment.
It is. It really is. Men's basketball, they started practice on Monday, had a little press conference. All of us got to hear from Matt, from John Morant, from Shaq Buchanan. But they're about to get their season going beginning in November, so they have about a month to work on things. Any early impressions on what we heard?
Well, I think seeing one practice, you know, we were kind of we just didn't have a lot of contact with the guys over the summer, so I didn't really know what to expect. Of course, I'd heard some things, and you know, and guys had talked, and you know, it was easy to see things like what Ja Morant was doing, because Ja was a little busy, you know, on the national scene a little bit. You know, he made a little bit of movement, moved the needle, being at the CP3 camp and how well he played there. And of course, he's gotten a little bit of national attention just on draft boards and ESPN discussion, talking about up-and-coming sophomores and, you know, where the trajectory is headed for a young man like Ja Morant. But, you know, I think some of my early impressions, I think, interestingly enough, this is an offense that has to be retooled. And just by obvious subtraction, you know, from graduation, you have two elite players, one in an NBA camp right now, and Jonathan Stark and Terrell Miller, you know, pursuing his professional opportunities. Two of the best three-point shooters maybe ever to come through Murray State men's basketball. Obviously, you've had some great three-point shooters in the past, but consistently two of the best three-point shooters. Terrell really provided a great down-low presence last year. I think he was 65% inside, you know, 3 feet, and that's just maybe even a little higher. Solid free throw shooter. Stark, one of the best free throw shooters ever to come through, you know, and then end up being OVC Male Athlete of the Year. So to replace those two guys and the amount of production that they provided this Murray State team last season is tough. I mean, it'd be tough for any team, you know, any program in the country to have to replace what those two guys provided. So that's the one thing that McMahon and Ja Morant and Shaq Buchanan and this senior class and anyone, you know, somebody's got to step up and take that over that production. And how does it come? Does it come in more rebounding? Does it come in better post play? Does it come in new three-point shooters that McMahon and his team have recruited and signed? I'm not sure, but that's what'll, you know, that's what they'll have to figure out over the next 6 weeks. Defense is there.
Yeah, yeah. And that's usually the first task you have to do, is teach your team how to play defense. I think with the newcomers, they just got to get some of them on board. But for the returnees, they're pretty good defensively.
Yeah, that was the one thing that Matt mentioned on Monday, too, is that you take a look at some of your top defenders from your rotation last year. Mm-hmm. Shaq, Ja, Anthony, Breon Sanctius.
Yeah.
Your style, your core defenders, whether they start or not, which, granted, I fully expect, I don't want to speak too far ahead of the coaching staff here, but I would fully expect at least Ja and Shaq to likely start. That's two of your starters from last season. I would think Breon probably has a chance to start after finishing last year so strong.
Right.
But again, the post play there, I'm sure, will determine, you know, what they go with moving forward. But your elements, your defensive style, your core guys that were so successful in that seven-man rotation last year are there. So I think, to me, I don't think you'll see the defense miss a beat this year. It's the offense that'll have to find a way to get humming.
We'll talk a lot of basketball in coming weeks, but right now a little bit of golf. We don't talk a lot, but yesterday a lot of success on the links for Murray State. On the women's side, the women came from I think, four shots down for a 12-shot win at the F&M Bank Austin Peay Intercollegiate. Lynette Holmeslike, the runner-up there. She's having a great year. And then on the men's side at the UTM Skyhawk Classic at Paris Landing State Park, Austin Knight, the medalist, had a 68 yesterday. And the men with a 205, they finished second. Made up a lot of ground, but not quite enough against Tennessee State, who ended up winning that. But a pretty good day.
Well, you take a look at, for one, Velvet's team is once again going to be led by somebody who's just been there and done that before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if Holmeslike is their one this year, then they're going to be in good hands potentially for another OVC championship. You take a look at the men, you know, this is a men's program that's been growing over the last two or three years from a youth perspective, and some of these guys have gotten a lot of experience. You take a look at Eddie Hunt's team, it's a very local team.
Yeah.
You know, these are a bunch of guys from the West Kentucky, Central Kentucky area that are doing a lot of damage, and I think it's just kind of been a long time coming. They've added a couple of pieces. Dalton Bagwell from McCracken County has been, you know, pretty competitive this early in the fall. You've added a former Murray High athlete in, you know, in James Boone, who, you know, left Samford basketball, sat for about a year, kind of relaxed and tried to get back under, you know, get his strength back, get his energy back, get his enthusiasm back. Now he's playing competitive golf for Eddie, and then you've got a Marshall County athlete in Quinn Eaton, who didn't play this particular weekend, but has been in the top five for Eddie over the last couple of months. And it just, and then Austin Knight, of course, from Hopkinsville, and he's probably their best golfer, been the most consistent. Eddie pulled me to the side this past weekend at the Murray State UT Martin game, and just had a lot to say about Austin and how successful he's been, and kind of some of the even the injuries and mental stress that he's pushed through
right.
to have such a successful fall. So, you know, this is a men's team that if they're playing like this in late March, they might be in conversation for a potential OVC championship.
Last time we talked Racer soccer, they lost a OVC game. And then they went out and took it out on Tennessee Tech and Jacksonville State. Didn't give up a goal. They had a couple of players honored, but a couple of big wins. They'll take on a Martin team that doesn't have a loss. And, of course, the way soccer works, that means they're in third place. So whatever that, I don't know. Well, anyhow, they play them on Friday.
They do. You take a look at kind of what ended up happening. They lost that SIU Edwardsville game in overtime. Coach Lodge is right. Not since Lodge and even before that, Jeremy Groves had been here, had they won at SIUE. It always either been a tie or the wins they'd gotten against SIUE had been at home, you know, in those undefeated seasons. And so even the years that they went like 7-0-3 or 8-0-2, they were ties with Edwardsville because it's just such a gritty place to go and play. It's so tough. They just have a problem. They actually got outshot in that game, 21-9. SIUE was fairly direct, had a really hard time. I think Racers defensively did well with it, but just never could get any offense going, and it cost them late. It was a bloop goal, as it always is. If you remember 2016, I believe, mm-hmm. the Racers had gone undefeated in the league and lost to Edwardsville at Cutchin on a bloop overtime goal, and they went on to Then, of course, they went on to beat Notre Dame at, you know, in the NCAA tournament, which was a stunning thing. Got outshot 22-3 in that game and still won.
Jeez.
That's soccer for you. You just need one goal sometimes. But the one thing that the Racers have done since that loss, and I wrote a little bit about it last week, is they've moved to a 4-3-3, which is basically they were a 3-5-2 before. This puts a little bit more pressure on the midfield, but it's a lot more direct. It's a little bit more attacking. And they've got the forwards and the midfielders to really cycle in some of this depth. I mean, he's been playing now since that game, since that SIUE loss. He's been playing 20, 22, 23 women, and they've been getting at least 15, 20 minutes off the bench. This has been, you know, an assault. And if you take a look at what happened this past week against Tech and against Jacksonville State, they outshot Tech 23-11. They outshot Jacksonville State, I think, 25-10. I mean, just a continual peppering of the goal, major possession, and honestly having that fourth wing to come back, that that backfield, adding someone else in the backfield gives Steigerwald more time to kind of reassess her space in the goal and where she needs to be. It doesn't necessarily put as much pressure on her. There's enough athleticism on this team to be good defensively with four back and push the ball up. So, again, this is a much more aggressive front. This is really what I've been told. This is what Lodge likes to do. It's a lot more offensive thinking. But, I mean, when you have Abby Jones, Maya Watford, and Rebecca Kuban as your forwards, I mean, he's had seven women now score in OVC play. Seven different players score. That's crazy. That'd be like Matt McMahon having seven guys averaging, you know, 4 to 6 points a game. That'd be great if that's where this offense comes in a balanced way. But, you know, from a soccer standpoint, if you have seven different players that have scored a goal in OVC play, it means you can go anywhere on the field and find a goal. And so that's what they're looking for moving forward. And I think it's going to catch a lot of people off guard. And Friday is a huge game between Murray State and UT Martin because it should be for the outright lead.
Volleyball, they dug themselves quite the hole. 0-3 to start the season in conference play. Got the win against Eastern Kentucky. They're back home against this weekend, starting Friday against SIUE.
Yeah, and that's a big game, too. Obviously, the win against Eastern Kentucky was a sweep, a little bit closer than I think they would have liked it to have been. It was a 3-0 sweep, I believe. Yes, I was there. That is correct. I was just trying to think back. That was such a busy weekend for family weekend. It wasn't the cleanest of sweeps, but a sweep is a sweep. And I think the biggest thing that they've tried to figure out is how to play without Rachel Holdhouse. I think Schwepker had told me right before that game, a couple days before, that the biggest problem they had is when she went down with an injury at the St. Louis Invitational, you know, that they just hadn't really found a way to replace her. Like her skill set, replace, you know, what she provided for the team, that stability, that mid-block strength that she has. And that had been a problem for four games, and that was what led to another loss at the SLU Invitational and then three straight close losses, mind you, in the OVC. But close losses still are losses.
Right.
And you're right. That's a, you know, volleyball strange. You can lose 3-0 and it be 25-23, 25-23, 25-23, as close as you can get it, still a loss. And so the Racers have been trying to scramble and figure out what it is they were going to do in her absence. Good thing is, she might be close to a return. And as you and I have seen so many times in so many different OVC sports, there's plenty of time left to play.
Sure.
And a lot of conference play to happen. So certainly this weekend will be a big test for them. They've had a week off, you know, after finally getting home and playing their first home match of the year, mind you. Played 15 on the road straight. That's just crazy, you know, and it gets, as Schwepker noted, because of scheduling, it gets later and later and later a lot of times for them. They'd love to play Racer Arena an early match, but sometimes it just, from a timing perspective, they've got to go play these tournaments on the road, and then sometimes OVC play at home just doesn't start for another 2 weeks after that, and that's just the unfortunate scheduling of it. But here they are, and this is a big weekend for them.
High school football, what are the big games this week? You know, off the top of your head?
It's fall break, so usually
not
fall break is kind of a quiet, quiet week. I will say a colossal game that Al Willman will be at is Henderson-McCracken County.
Okay.
That's a big game. Henderson kind of sputtering a little bit. They really struggled to against Caldwell County a couple of weeks ago. This could be for, if I'm not mistaken, since McCracken beat Davis and Ohio, this likely will be for the district championship. So this is a pretty, you know, for the regular season top seed.
Yeah.
If McCracken can move to 3-0 in district play, you can pretty much hand them the district title in the regular season, which would guarantee not only a home game, but
right,
but just basically rights their ship after they had a tough start to the year. So that's probably the biggest game. Anything outside of that, Crittenden County Ballard Memorial should be a fun game, be a little bit of a shootout, but Crittenden County's really good this year. And then, surprisingly enough, I'll be honest with you, I'm not really sure where I'm headed yet. I haven't decided where I'm going to go, but if you had told me at the beginning of the season that Callaway County, Fulton County football would be a fun I would have called you silly.
Right.
But I'm wrong. Fulton County was a point away from an upset at Russellville,
mm-hmm,
a win that they've not gotten in years. They had a 22-0 lead late in the third quarter. Russellville kind of turned the jets on and pulled away for the one-point victory. Fulton County is a lot better this year than people think. I will say that. I can say that. You know, their start, their 4-0 start might have been a little bit of smoke and mirrors because they didn't. I think their first four teams went are combined like 1-30 now. I think at some point, but they played Greenfield, Tennessee, a solid, you know, Northwest Tennessee team, pretty well. Had the lead there and lost that to end their winning streak. But again, they were up 22-0 at Russellville, and that's the, I think they're just trying to find that consistency in some of these bigger games. And Callaway now looks like a lot better, you know, than people thought they were going to be.
Running clock, and they weren't the victim last week.
No.
That was
and the week before that, they almost beat Marshall.
Yeah.
You know, had them in overtime. So, missed a field goal to win it. You know, and no disrespect, that's a tough kick to make.
It is.
But, you know, that wasn't an easy kick either. I think it was like mid-30s. Low 40 kick. It was would have been a hard kick for any high school kicker.
They have to be happy with Chris Champion at this point.
I mean, they really
have to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think they've found a lot of weapons. I think it starts with Luke Schwepker, Dave's son.
Mm-hmm.
Give that man the ball 15 times a game.
Yes.
Anywhere. Yeah. I don't care if he's a receiver. I don't care if he's a quarterback. I don't care if he's running back. I don't care if he's cheerleader. let him have the ball 15 times a game. But they have some other weapons as well. I know Darius Stribling is having a really good year at running back. They found some space for him. The quarterback situation between Zach Orange and Foster, I think, is sorting itself out pretty well, and they found ways to use both of those guys in effective ways. I'm happy for them. You know, it was tough. Obviously, playing a Murray team that had so many pieces working for them, that game, mm-hmm. Crosstown Classic could have sunk the season. You walk out of that game, you're like, all right, this is what we're going to be. And that's not what they've been so far. They have put up a dogfight in every game they've been in. The Madisonville North Hopkins game, you know, that would have been tough for anybody.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, they're a great running team. So that's just what it's turned into. Callaway's season, certainly a lot to play for this Friday night at Fulton County. And potential for that game to be very competitive, in my opinion, but we'll see. That's if we were talking about it at the beginning of the season.
Oh yeah
I would have never known.
Yeah. Murray had won three straight games. They get Mayfield at home. You know, I think Mayfield's really good. I'm not sure how long Murray can hang with them. 21-0 early in the second quarter. I thought I may have had a wrong call on this game, and then Mayfield became Mayfield, and before you know it, there's 63 points on the board. I think 63-28, but really no shame for Murray. They've been playing well, but that just shows you how good this Mayfield team is. I mean, they may be one of the top 5-6 teams in the state, regardless of class. They're that good.
I completely agree. I will say Murray did come away with Jaden Stinson's first interception of his season.
Yes.
He's now a mediocre. He's now mediocre 23-1 touchdown to interception ratio.
Well, are they going to make a change this week? What's going on?
I'll call Joe and ask him. I love Jaden Stinson. He is a great quarterback. You could see glimpses of that last year, that it was coming, that he was going to be the next big signal caller for Mayfield. He certainly has it this year.
My wife had him in middle school and just talked about he's a great kid too.
Well, just an incredible just an all-around great player.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can add off the field off to that,
yeah,
onto
that's
that
awesome.
That's also a great thing in my opinion. But you know, yes, I will be the first to say that Jaden Stinson has a ton of weapons around him. When you have Cade Neely, when you have, you know, Kent Trey Matthews, when you have D.S. Perry, when you know, the list goes on and on and on from an offensive standpoint. You know, Connor Guthrie, I haven't even mentioned him yet. You have all of these different types of weapons around you, then you look good as a quarterback. But I mean, to not throw an interception for 6.5 games, whew, that's hard to do at any level, any classification. You know, it's high school football. You know, Tommy Waldrop, nod out to him. He's the one that came away with the interception. I suggested that they exchange jerseys after the game, but I know Coach Hodge and his team probably aren't taking a moral victory. That game was 28-28 late in the first half. Now, granted, or 28-21. Granted, again, you just mentioned it, Mayfield went on a 42-7 run. From that point forward, that's what they've done a lot. Tillman kind of hung with them early. And then they went on like a 33-0 run or something like that. It was 23-0. Yeah, 23-0 run to put that game away. The Mayfield team has done, if you take a look at that, that's where Mayfield has done its best work, is in their second half adjustments. They've done such a great job. These close games, even the Corbin game was close before they ran out, like I think a 21-0 run. They just do a great job adjusting on offense and defense. It's a smart team. It's a very physical team, and they're just – and I think we talk so much about defense in these last few years. Their offense is unbelievable. It is an unbelievable offense, and they're finding ways to score in so many different ways.
Well, I had a rewarding night last night. I stayed up till about midnight. But the Cubs lost, so I got to see what I wanted to see. I was a happy man when I went to bed. So Cubs gone. The Cubs and Cardinals have the equal number of postseason wins. Although the Cardinals, that's three straight years they haven't been in. So that I'm just starting to not feel too good. Nevertheless, Cubs in a classic 13-inning game in the wild card last night. Tonight you get the Yankees and the A's. Did you stay up and watch the game last night?
I did. I was listening to Chicago ESPN AM 1000. Okay. On iHeartRadio on the way home. I was watching ESPN updates while I was writing stories last night. But then I had, of course, we're watching the updates, and it's like 9th inning, 10th inning. It's like, man, I got to get in the car and go home. So I got in the car, fired up some iHeartRadio and ESPN 1000 AM out of Chicago. And, I mean, what can you do?
Yeah.
It's a bloop single up the middle. Yeah. Trevor Story had a single, gets to third, scores. And then the first inning, you take a look at Lester. I mean, outside of his rough first inning where he gave off, what, a leadoff double,
yeah,
I believe, to Blackman. Mm-hmm. Blackman later scores on a sack fly. And then he had 9 strikeouts in 5 innings. I think he was lights out.
Didn't deserve he didn't lose, but he didn't deserve a loss. And pitched well enough to win.
But so did Freeland.
He did. That was good.
And that's the two things that you can take away, and I'm not a huge Cubs fan either. I pay attention to the National League Central because I'm a miserable Reds fan, and I want everyone else around me to feel miserable.
Sure.
So I like making fun of the Cardinals, and even really to some degree the Cubs. But, you know, a lot of futility in the last couple of weeks. I know injuries really caught up to this team midway through the season, but it's hard to fathom what you just said before we went on the air, to have that kind of a lead in the National League Central, only to watch the hot Milwaukee Brewers. Yelich is going to win MVP. I don't know how he doesn't now. I know we talked about Matt Carpenter 3 months ago, but that's how crazy baseball can change. Like, yeah, that's how much it can change. If Christian Yelich is an MVP, I don't know who gets it. Who gets it? Maybe DeGrom. But they didn't make playoffs, so maybe he gets the Cy Young, Yelich gets MVP, I don't know. But unbelievable stuff that Milwaukee did in the last 3 weeks of the season. Unbelievable stuff that the Colorado Rockies did the last 3 weeks of the season. I mean, they staved off the Cardinals by going to St. Louis and beating them.
Yeah.
You know, and look at what they've done these last 72 hours. They're road warriors. I mean, I know that's such a cliche term these days, but, I mean, they were what's their order now? They were in LA, they were Denver, then LA. Now they just won at Wrigley in a one game playoff. Right. Now they're headed to Milwaukee. They're exhausted. That's all in the last 72 hours.
These guys play. That's what they do. They play baseball every day. They're going to get a day off. They'll be fine.
But what I'm saying is, like, in these last 72 hours, yeah, they hadn't had a day off.
No, they haven't. No,
it was travel, baseball, travel, baseball, travel, baseball.
They'll get one. They'll be fine Thursday. They'll get a little bit of rest.
I would not. If I'm Milwaukee, I'm not comfortable in the slightest.
But they're good, too.
I wouldn't have been comfortable with either of these teams. That's what made this so special. It's not very often you see the two division leads, the leaders, have to come down to these playoffs.
Yeah.
The Dodgers pounded the Rockies. The Dodgers, in my opinion, are the scariest of all because their offense actually is humming and their pitching is humming. Like, when Clayton Kershaw isn't your hottest starter, what?
Yeah.
Who's their hottest starter right now? Is it Ryu?
And he pitches game one against the Braves.
If you told me that Kershaw was going to pitch game two, gross.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not even the fact that they've got Walker Buehler, who has been pitching well.
Yeah.
Plus their bullpen's healthy. They went and got all these guys for their infield rotation. Dozier, you know.
Baez was hurt early in the season. I think that cost him. But Pedro's he's been exactly what they want in a setup guy. They have everything clicking. They're good.
And Kenley Jansen is still.
I still think, and I'm an Indians fan, I'll be rooting for them starting Friday afternoon. But I still think everyone is seeing who's going to lose to the Red Sox.
Yep.
And I hate that, but that's just what I'm afraid of. They're really good.
It might very well come down to just the Red Sox being the Red Sox.
Yeah. They have very few weaknesses. All right, Ed, safe travels to Charleston, Mattoon, wherever you plan on staying.
We're staying in Mattoon.
Yeah, fantastic. There's so much to do there. There's the Steak and Shake. And then there's the airport. So that's about it.
We'll probably just do loops. We'll just drive back and forth. We'll go watch airplanes take off, and then we'll go to the Steak and Shake.
You do need to go to the Steak and Shake, honestly, because that way you can relive a part of Racer history. The shortest trip in the history of Murray State athletics, as far as we know, was to that Steak and Shake. There's a hotel right next to it. We loaded the bus, I promise, going to our next road game. Loaded the bus. We played at Eastern Illinois the night before on a Friday morning. Got on the bus, drove out of the parking lot into the Steak and Shake parking lot. I promise. And then ate breakfast at Steak and Shake.
I don't have any words.
And when you see how short that is,
I don't have any words for that. No, I know where.
Rather than just go to Steak and Shake and eat, and then get on the bus back at the hotel parking lot. No.
Just walk.
Yeah. We told that to Mick Cronin. He couldn't believe us. He's like, what? There's no, it's like, no, Coach, I swear that happened. I promise. So a little bit of Racer history, little knowledge there.
Unbelievable.
It was. Full disclosure, I think the plan was to go to Cracker Barrel, and I think they changed their mind once they got on the bus.
But, gotcha.
But that is exactly what happened.
Okay.
All right, Ed. Have a great weekend. We'll chat with you next week.
Sounds good.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.